Hello and welcome to the second season of the Royal Children's Hospital podcast series, Life, Love and Loss, Caring for a Child Who is Dying. Produced by the Victorian Paediatric Palliative Care Program and nationally funded by Palliative Care Australia as part of the National Action Plan Project. My name is Lena Kaneva. I'm a journalist and facilitator of this series. This is the second season of a further six episodes which will continue to focus on the experience of families whose children have died from a life-limiting condition. Family members bravely share the joys and sorrows of their experience with the hope that their voices can support, inform, and better prepare other families who may need to face similar challenges. This is episode 4, Making Sense of Loss, Hope, Spirituality and Meaning. In this episode, we will consider what hope and spirituality means to different families and how families draw on this throughout their experience. Spiritual care for children is an important aspect of paediatric palliative care, even more so as a child approaches the end of their life. Some children and families may feel conflicted about hope and spirituality. Many seek opportunities to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in their lives at such a devastating time. Today we're joined by two mums. Helena is a mum to twin girls who were born prematurely. One of the twins, Sunshine, or Sunny as she's known, was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. Sadly, Sunny died at the Royal Children's Hospital in December 2020. Also with us today is Alex, who is the mother of Luciana and Sophia. In 2018, aged six, Sophia was diagnosed with a cancer in her liver. Despite curative treatment attempts, Sophia's cancer relapsed and she sadly died at home in 2020, aged eight. Welcome to you both in the studio today. Helena, tell us a little bit about Sunny. What was she like?
Sunny, my Sunny girl, her full name was Sunshine Rose, and she lived up to that name. She had a smile that was magical. She was delightful, despite all her struggles. She was full of joy and had a very challenging journey right from the beginning. The girls were born at 28 weeks, and really they're both pretty miraculous. Sunny in particular had the first 6 months in hospital. And really, we just thought she had developmental delay. And then she was diagnosed as profoundly deaf and went on to get a cochlear implant. But by the time she was two, I think the formal diagnosis of cerebral palsy, severe, was given, and we began grappling with that. So it's been, I often use the word bittersweet journey, right from the beginning up until when she was 15 and a half, when she passed away.
Yeah. So she was obviously in a wheelchair and...
Yes, completely. She was non-verbal. She needed help 24/7 with everything. So I was not only her mother, but I pretty much took on more and more the role of carer, and that was right up until when she passed. So it defined our family and defined especially my life in the later years too.
Alex, tell us about Sophia.
Sophia was crazy. That's the best way I can always describe Sophia. And she was lovely, always giving love and hugs and looking after people and looking after the environment and don't do this and defending people and helping people. So she was beautiful, just beautiful to watch, you know. And sometimes people will stop and say, oh, you're the mom of the beautiful girl. It was a different beauty, you know. She was really special, was really close to her sister, and she had a strong character. She will be like a yes and no person. Really stubborn, direct to you, saying what she needed to say, and she will say it. If he didn't like it, she will say it. If he didn't like someone, she will say, let's go. So that was Sophia.
When did you notice that she wasn't well?
She started getting headaches. So, yeah, I started taking her to GPs and she's not okay, but nothing major, like for a couple of months, until one day she had her tummy a little bit bigger, and then they did an ultrasound, and they found out she had a tumor in her liver.
And how did the sickness, apart from the pain in the stomach, what happened then? What happened to her then?
Before, nothing. It was just a small headache once in a while for a couple of months. And then after she got the biopsy, like she came to hospital and then she got the biopsy and they say, yeah, this is what she has. That's when she got a little bit sick. She started getting pain and she had to stay in hospital for 2 months. Until they did the surgeries and they knew what she had, because it was difficult from the testing and everything, difficult to say exactly what she had until they sent samples to the USA and they confirmed, and because it was a cancer that didn't happen in too many children. So they were like, how come this is happening? Yeah, it does happen only in adults. So didn't happen too much here, only like 200 kids in the world, so it was a little bit confronting. So we spent at least 2 months, you know, just trying to understand and see what she had, and then finally she got the final diagnosis. And then after that, we went back home, and yeah, that was the most difficult part, the 2 months. And then she did the treatment for 6 months. Every month we had to come back to hospital for the treatment. That was difficult as well, especially at the end. And then from there, she finished. She was good, happy, going back to school, 3 months. And then we found out again that she was sick. She got a pain in her foot, and then we knew she got it back. But from there, she was okay.
So then it was a relapse after that?
Yes.
After
3 months,
treatment?
Yeah, yes. Like she finished treatment, and 3 months later, exactly 1 year after her first diagnosis, she got it again the same day. We knew. Same day. 1 year after. 5th of October. I still remember.
And did you receive the bad news that it may not be treatable?
We came back to hospital. We had the appointments with the oncologist and they told us immediately. It came back and there is nothing else that can be done. We will check alternatives. So they told us there are these treatments that we could try, but we said no. My husband and I didn't even talk. We didn't even spoken, but when the doctor finally came with the alternatives, we just said no, both. At the same time, we just said no, she doesn't belong to a hospital. She had enough. We cannot keep going with this. This is not fair for her. She will be in a better place. She's going to be happy. And she made it clear when she finished the treatment, she said to me, Mom, no way I'm having this treatment never again in my life. So we knew. She told us. She had beautiful 8 months that we enjoyed her, and then finally she passed.
How did spirituality come into making that decision for you? And did it?
For a long time, maybe since my first daughter was born, I kept looking for answers. I was like, this is not everything for me. This is... I need answers, but I never found them until my daughter got sick. And then I saw that movie, The Matrix. And when I saw it, I'm like, we live in a matrix, you know, this is what it is. So when my daughter got sick, I told her, this is just a test. We all, before we come here, we pick a test to be able to learn something. I don't know what it is. It's compassion, it is service. I don't know what we're learning, but I said, you're learning through sickness, and we're going to make it. So she believed me, and I said, when we live, when we die, we go somewhere else, and that's the real life, and we meet there. When she got the second, when they told us, like, she was going to go, we all kind of knew in our family that it was the moment that she picked her life, her test, and that she said over there, I'm just going to last a year, so you're going to have to keep going without me. And like we knew, and she used to tell me things like, Mom, in my next life, I want you again. And I say, what else do you want? This house, and my daddy, and my sister, and my dog. So she used to say things like that. We wouldn't talk about death like you're going to die. We will talk in different ways. And I said to her one day, when we all go, we close our eyes And then we open them, and then it's you see mommy, and then you see your sister, and then you close them again, and you will see your dad. She will always say things like, okay, and keep playing, you know, like she was really special and connected, and she will say little things or beautiful things about, in my next life, we just talk about it that way. So she was prepared.
Helena, can I bring you in on this? Because that's a big spiritual conversation that she's able to have. Was there hope for you and spirituality attached to how you spoke to Sunny?
Yes, right throughout Sunny's journey, spirituality is a very big part of my life and journey, and especially being hopeful. So even though the prognosis, you know, when you have a child with a disability and all the realities of that, which was very obvious by that time, I continued to be very hopeful, very strong faith. But at the same time, it was like two journeys were going on at the same time. I was always hopeful. I was just madly in love with my children and just adored Sunny. So you would, as a parent, as lots of parents of special needs children do, you push, 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 you pursue everything that might make your child's life better. And at the same time, there was this journey of, I think the word adapting is good. There was an awareness of, with every year, of what the possibilities were, what was definite, what that we could grow in. And so there were those two journeys always going on in my heart. It's like never give up hope, but then adapting to, okay, she is going to be in a wheelchair. Her CP is too severe to think that she would be walking. Realizing that she's going to be nonverbal, that wouldn't happen, but then looking at alternative communication and being very hopeful and doing that, you know. So there was always those journeys. So I just had to adapt with it. And that was, I think, my grief journey, or I've learned to call it chronic grief right from the beginning, because I felt like I lost the dream that I had, you know, of like my children, because I'd had infertility for years. So it was this amazing dream come true. And then it was hard to realize it wasn't going to look like how I looked, and it was very different. So I was adjusting, adapting, but always saying, I'm going to build a beautiful family with what I've got. Okay, it's not what I thought. So adapt, change. And underneath that was always my faith in God, always very strong. And I actually was working in a church at the time. I'm a singer and musician. Sunny's journey became part of the church community and beautiful support through there as well. So it's always been part of Sunny's journey right up till the end.
Was your spirituality shaken?
Totally. I don't know anyone who experiences, you know, traumas and disappointments and deep pain. It's very confronting. So it brought my faith to a whole new level. It's like what was happening to us as a family and to Sunny didn't fit in the box that I had, because the box said we can fix things and I expected good things. So my theology, my expectations, the box kind of smashed, went to pieces. And through that, I became very honest and real. And it's been a rich journey, I can say now. At the time, it was very traumatic moments, very dark. But I realised there aren't any boxes to put God or spirituality or ourselves in. And we don't really know answers to anything. But that I believed in the power of love, and that God is love, and that we have the power to love and show compassion. And Sunny exposed me to that world more and more, and it impacted me so much. It impacted the art that I would produce, or the way I would live my life and share my journey with others in churches. It transformed me, probably. I often use the word, it messed with me. But I ended up beautifully messed, because I think we need to be messed with in life to really see the real stuff, which isn't all just the easy stuff, if that makes sense.
Alex, you're nodding there. Obviously, spirituality is part of the way you live and hope. And obviously, you spoke to your child, to Sophia, in a way that she could understand. How did it affect you generally in terms of your faith?
I think that now I know for myself what faith is. I just go simple. It is what it is. The way I can describe the faith is like you don't need to expect anything. You just live and you just trust that whatever happens to you is for a reason and it's just the way it needs to be. That's it. You don't need to ask questions anymore. Honestly, I said to people sometimes, I'm not afraid of death anymore. I actually embrace it. That's part of life. Why don't we teach people about that? This is death. Embrace it, because we all gonna go through that. When I was shaken, I almost died. And I'm like, why is this happening? I need my answers now. And I feel I have my answers and I have done my share of compassion and love. And I believe, you know, like you as well, like God is love and we are God and we are pure love. Let's give that love. What can I do while I'm here? Okay, my daughter is gone, but I'm still here. Why? I don't know. But I have to help people. I have to live my life. And now I know what happiness is. So I can enjoy now this moment. And tomorrow I could be crying for my daughter because something just came or my memories or whatever. Because that's life. That's happiness, you know. You don't have to be happy 24/7 and keep looking for that happiness. I was happy when I was looking after my daughter and saying, this is my mission in life, you know. Looking after this beautiful human being that is teaching me so much through what she's going through. And we were, as a family, going through so much and learning. And that's how I feel. Like, we as human beings in my family, we are better after all of this. And sometimes people say to me, oh, this is so bad, what happened to you? This is a tragedy. And I say, can you please stop? Mm. I can tell you from my experience that is the most beautiful thing that happened, because she taught us so much, because she was sick, but she was happy.
So you've been able to share your spirituality with your family, with your friends. Some of the reactions may have been, as you say, a bit surprised that they can see you using the hope that you had.
When we go through these situations, we can grow, and it's like you are reborn. I feel like when people talk about near-death experiences, that's how I felt. Like I died and I was born again. And I can share my feelings with people, and I'm happy to share them because I feel them and I believe them. Normally people want to hear it, because it's from a respectful way and it's my views. So I'm not trying to convince any of my friends, any of the people that I know. So I feel like it's actually, some most of the time, it's helping, because they know I've been through this. They listen. Yes, so I don't know if that happens to Helene as well, but it's like they want to listen from you because they know, okay, she has some real experience. So maybe she learned something. I want to hear from this person. So that's how I feel. And I'm happy to, yeah, just share my views with anyone. And
does any of this resonate with you, Helena?
I think what I love is how we all have the power to frame what we're experiencing. And that's beautiful, what you're doing. And I've talked to other people who have parents who've lost children and are framing it with their experiences in very different ways, and we all have the power to do that, you know, and that's a beautiful way to see it. And I'm so aware that not everyone does that. And for me, I think my grief journey is a little different in that way, but it still resonates that I have a deeper faith now, even through Sunny. Whereas I think some people probably think you go through that and you just go, oh, you lose your faith or something. It had an opposite effect on me. I fully understand how it can mess with people. But for me, I feel like I found more spirituality. I found more of who I believed God was, and love and compassion, and just more tapping into the realness of life that a lot of, you know, normally you're just busy, you know, living life, and it can be very shallow, I think. And when you have a child with such needs and you're pulled into this emotional space that's so devastating, challenging, it pulls you into the very real, raw part of life that is, wow, like you learn so much about yourself and people and our spirituality, you know, that's really where, for me, where my life was. So for me, I have, when Sunny passed, I have a belief that there is more after life. I have no idea what it is. And everyone has different views, and I'm happy for everyone to have different views and religions and everything like that. But for me, I guess I stick to the picture that I've always had, which is an afterlife of the classic view that I grew up in a church believing for, kind of this picture of heaven, you know, an afterlife that, and that's where we go and that we will meet again. And I just feel like that's the frame that I believe and love the idea of. And so I have a very real sense of peace that one day I'm going to meet Sunny again when I end my journey here. And that just gives me such a sense of, well, peace and joy. And it kind of, it makes the story all okay. If I didn't have that sense, I think I'd be swearing my face off and being just more bitter, you know, like I just go, that's not fair, you know, why do some people get to do this and why is there suffering? And we could all go on forever in that space. But I have a very clear picture when Sunny passed away, which was, and it was a very peaceful passing. It was at palliative care here at the Children's, and we were just so supported so compassionately. And over 5 days, Sunny didn't wake up. So even though we spent time with her and I would talk to her and sing to her and whisper to her and everything, you know, knowing that she sensed us all there, but she didn't wake up and I couldn't really say things to her face to face. But the next day after I, you know, so she passed and it was quiet, it was beautiful, and I use the word holy, and then devastating and terrible. You know, it was all of it, all of it. But the next morning when I woke up, it was, you know, kind of a wreck, as you can all imagine, I realised that I kind of had a picture, because I'm a real creative soul, so this is how life works for me. I always get pictures and, you know, that's just how I work. And I realised that there was this kind of picture in my mind, and I paid attention to it. I was like, what's that picture in my mind? And it was like a picture of a girl, and she was like standing on a hill, you know, on a green hill, and her hair was kind of flying and just standing really sassy with her hands on her hips, you know, and the wind was blowing. And I went, you know, like, why have I got that picture? And then as I looked, it was like blurry, and as I looked closer, and all of a sudden I went, that's my girl, Sunny. And the thing is, all Sunny's life, like she didn't have a strong body. She was, you know, she needed lots of care. She was like a baby in that way. I never saw her, she never stood. She always wore glasses and a cochlear implant, you know. But in this picture, there was this beautiful, strong girl looking more similar to her twin sister. And she didn't have glasses or anything. Her hair wasn't all done. It was all just wild. And she just looked like she had already been on 10 adventures, you know, like a kid on a farm. And she was wild with excitement and joy in her eyes. And I saw it all and I went, that's my Sunny. And that most beautiful picture is what I carry about where she is now. And even in that, those few months, it was very weird for me to not care for her, because I always cared for her, just even physically. So in that first month afterwards, I'd find myself, during the day, I would kind of, you know, say a prayer. I'd go, oh, God, can you look after Sunny for me? You know, like, and then I'd go, oh, of course, she's being looked after, you know. And there was one moment where I was imagining her and I went, oh, God, can you just give her a hug for me? I'm missing her so bad. And it's like I imagined God going, if I can catch her, I will, because she's just off, you know. And I went, that's my girl. And because that was the essence of who she was. But she was a feisty, beautiful, strong spirit stuck in a broken body, you know, and she did the best she could and we all did the best we could. But now she was set free. And so I believe that our spirit lives on and that, you know, she's living on. And I can't wait, you know, I believe that, you know, I'll be able to have finally some conversations with her, what we were never able to have, and hear her voice sing in a way that I could never, ever hear. So that's my view of how I see it. And it makes me feel very peaceful and very, very joyful about it, even though right at the same time, I would do everything in my power if I could have her back here and smother her with kisses and see her smile and have her with me. So it's very, it's so bittersweet. It's so both of them. And so if I think about her a lot and I allow myself time sometimes to look at old movies and things and feel it all and, you know, tears will come or just strong emotions. But then at the same time, I'm okay to let her go and know that she would want me to live a really full life. And I feel like I take what I learnt, the richness of what Sunny taught me, into the rest of my life, you know, and to try and be a blessing on the earth to whoever else, you know, and especially the way I see other people with disabilities, you know, like I feel like I see the same thing in them that I saw in Sunny, this beautiful, strong, brave spirits. I see a holiness in them that perhaps other people don't notice. And I recognise that I would never have seen that either before Sunny. Like when I interacted with people who, you know, they had children with special needs or something, and I would just go, hi. You know, it's only when you personally interact and have your own heart impacted that's when I got it and I saw that, and I'm grateful for that because I see life differently now and I feel like I'm alive in a way that a lot of people don't see. And not that I would wish a difficult journey or pain on anyone, you know, it's funny, like we would say, oh wow, I'm so changed from my journey with Sunny. But then I would say, yeah, I just wish I was still a shallow, horrible person because, you know, it comes at a price. But then as I take a step back, my journey involved pain with my daughter, Sunny, but other people are living, there's pain and terrible devastation everywhere in life. People are experiencing that in every way. Why wouldn't I experienced that, and this is the way it's come in my life, but someone else. So it's actually really normal. Do you know what I mean? To have loss, but to experience beauty and holiness within that. So yeah, it's all mixed together, like this big weird recipe of a chocolate cake that is amazing.
Alex, listening to what Alina's been saying, can you tell us about that final stage with Sophia and what it was like, you know, for her passing and what was happening to all of you?
Yeah, for everything that you said, I just go same. Mm-hmm. I was just nodding in. Yeah, that has been my experience as well. So you live these beautiful moments, and I was brought up in a Catholic family. So religion was there, and So my religion, I don't follow it too much, and I appreciate all religions, and I actually did research about all the different religions to understand more, to answer my questions, and then got to my conclusion, it's just one God. It's just that we brought out in different cultures, different religions, but it's love, compassion. And then when we said that to Sophia, and then We lived that. So when she was passing, I didn't feel, because I had that belief, I always felt like she's going to be fine. Her soul is not in the body. She's a dragonfly, weak body, but she's powerful. She's bigger than me, than so many. Her soul is so big that I cannot see her like poor Sophia, never. So when she was going, she was in my house, and I didn't want her at hospital because I knew she didn't want to be here, and I knew I didn't want to leave my daughter again, you know, like the other one. And she was 11 at that time. She was 9 when Sophia got 6. So I said, I'm going to stay home. And I said to my daughter, we're going to stay home, and she's going to pass here because we want to be with you as well, you know. So I wanted her at home and my husband as well. And we wanted to be together, the four of us. I remember when I felt like she's going to start getting sick, and I called the doctors from palliative care. They were assisting us with the medicine, and they put Sophia, the medicine, in a difficult time. But then that was like 3 p.m. They left. She went to sleep. And then 10 p.m., she wakes up. Are we going to watch a movie? And we are like, who is this one? You know, like she was making us laugh in the middle of all the difficulties. So I called the doctors. See, she's awake. So they say, look, sorry, she's not going to go. She's going to go kicking. They told me. So we knew like she wasn't going to fall asleep. She was always kind of awake and saying things. But my only objective from the moment the oncologist told me she's going to go was no pain, zero pain. So we managed that. She had, of course, some pain, but it was something manageable. The medicine, the doctors, everyone from the hospital was really good. And I used to sleep with her and hold her hand every night because that's what they recommend. Like they need to feel like someone is there, even if they don't talk, if you feel like they're not there, you hold their hand. So I was holding her hand or my mom or someone will be with her all the time because I needed my break. So I'm human. So I needed to go for a walk. I needed to have a hot shower. I needed to exercise. So I was keeping myself because I knew I had to keep going until the end and for my older daughter. So I had to. One night I told her, okay, good night. And if you see the light, just run, go. Go because... I said, just follow the light because you're going to leave again, because you're going to run again, because you're going to be happy. And just close your eyes and we will be there. And that night she passed. So it was peaceful as well. She just, I don't know, 7 a.m. maybe, I felt something waking me up. And I would just woke up like, what's going on? Like this, like when you wake up that you're scared, like someone is, you're so asleep and then someone is pushing you. I woke up like that, like something was waking me up. And my husband was next. And then I say, so I heard like she wasn't breathing like before. And then I got closer and then she just took two breaths and left. It was really, she woke up, something, you know. God, the angel, someone woke us up to be with her in her last two breaths. That was beautiful.
You mentioned the dragonfly. What's the symbolism of the dragonfly?
The weak body, strong wings. Someone said, that's your daughter. And then I'm like, yep, that's Sophia. So it's a symbol in my family now. My mom has a teacher with the dragonfly. It was mine, but she took it. She's present that way. Like we know she's a dragonfly. Like they are... so weak in the body. She was so weak in her body, you know, and since the moment she got sick.
Something for both of you, and I'll start with Alina. What would you say to other parents about voicing your spirituality? Because as you said earlier, some people are put off and would say, you know, that's not going to work for me. But what would you say to parents, some advice about voicing your hopes and spirituality? Mm.
I think it's so unique, people's journeys and their journey of pain and loss with their child and the nature of it. I even found talking to other mothers, we all did early intervention together and then we're online together. You know, we, all the mums, we talk and it's very powerful. But I think spirituality was a topic that we didn't share very much of because I sensed there was, and they knew like that I, you know, because I worked in churches and things like that. It was too painful because it was a bit explosive because, you know, perhaps they felt guilty, you know, the nature of their child's disability, you know, or maybe they were being punished, all these mixture of, or, you know, why did this happen to me? These questions, regret about maybe did I help cause it or, you know, it's just a minefield. And I went through my own version of that too. And sometimes questions aren't the right approach in life, and to parents it's more what, how are you going to live? And I guess it's very sacred ground, your hope and your peace, when you are experiencing such devastation of seeing your child. I mean, I would rather be in pain myself, but to see your child in pain, it's quite tormenting, and to have to see them undergo things that you know will help. And when they're 2 years old and you can distract them with Elmo or something, it's pretty different when they're 10 or 12 and you go, honey, we have to draw blood again. You know, this is, I don't like it. You know, to try and communicate that to Sunny so she would trust me and I wasn't trying to trick her while it's like, hey, look over here while this pain is happening, you know. So it's just such a mixture of things. I just find myself respecting the individuality of everyone's spiritual journey. Some parents are still in great pain over the loss of their child and have no sense of peace. And I understand that and respect that. And I guess that's their journey, because it just is. You can't just say it's okay when it's not okay. But I have really loved, I listened to a podcast, Finding Meaning, and about how it's, and because he lost his son as an adult as well, he's like, you can't find meaning in their suffering. There's, you know, there's nothing to justify watching your child suffer or get cancer or die. He said, it's our job to, after it, rather than being devastated, to find meaning. And perhaps that is, he said, for him, he felt grateful that he got 21 years, that he would rather suffer that loss. Like the beauty of knowing them was better than the pain of losing them, you know, like, so it gives you a bit of a cushion to lean on or sit on in your pain. And I went, yeah, it's not saying, oh, I'm grateful that I lost it. Like, it would be ridiculous, totally ridiculous. It's terrible. It's sad. It's loss. It's raw. But to somehow have a cushion here and there for saying, but what I learned from her. And when you see your child being so brave or giving you amazing insight or learning that you can be brave and that there's strength and there's support and the beauty of compassion that people show to each other, there's just a whole lot of beauty around it that kind of dulls that pointy, sharp end that makes you feel like you're going to die. You know, it's all real and raw and sometimes hard to put into words. I just respect parents' journeys when they're watching their child in pain and given very hard diagnosis, because until you walk in their shoes and then how it impacts their and resonates with their own perhaps past trauma and disappointments and dreams, because it's not just your child's dreams. It's like you have a dream for your life of what it will look like and now it looks different. It's so complex. I'd say all go to therapy and learn how to, do you know what I mean? Just journey through it as best you can.
Alex, how would you say to other parents about keeping faith and hope alive in the journey and after?
The only thing that I ever do is just talk about my experience, my feelings, and see if something is going to resonate with them. But you never tell, like, we're always respectful because we know the pain, you know? And we went through that and we found our way, you know? And we feel like, yes, we are. I always say, I'm okay. How are you? They ask me and I say, fine, you know? As good as you can be. So that's my typical answer. But I will never try to guide someone, because it's unique. It is unique, and you have to be ready. And we need to go through that. We need to look for the answers. And the only things that I try to share as much as I can is, like, don't feel guilty, because a lot of religions put that in people, like, you have done something bad. When people say, it's karma. I say, no, I read so much about karma, and karma to me just delete that word from your dictionary, from your mind. Karma is about learning. So life is going to, life, God, whatever you believe, if you believe or not in God, it doesn't matter. Life, just call it life, is going to give you opportunities to learn. If I can give an advice to people, is just be quiet. Don't say anything. Just give people a hug. That's all we need, you know, when we're going through this. Just give me a hug and be quiet. That's it. Don't open your mouth. Give me your heart. Give me love without words. I learned that good and bad don't exist. It is what it is. It's going to happen, and you face it again with the tools that you have, and you're going to face it better. So when my daughter was sick and they told me she's sick and she has cancer, no one wants to say cancer. Yes, it is a word that we have to say. Why do we have to say the C letter? it is cancer. It is what it is. So then we stop being afraid of talking about cancer. And then I get that opportunity and they told me, she's sick, she's going to, you know, perhaps die. She can have these possibilities. And I was shaking. I was so bad. I was asking the questions that we all ask. Why me? Why my daughter? Until she got better and then she got sick again. When she got sick again, I understood. And I saying, this is not karma. This is not punishment. This is life. So now I have acceptance. She's going to go. And I'm going to live with this. I'm going to help her. And I'm going to do the best that I can with my family. And then I'll see you up there. I don't ask questions anymore. I'm happy with what I have. I don't need to ask. When I die, I'm going to get my answers. So that's me.
Helena, what got you through the very bad days? What happened and how did you survive those days?
There were very hard days across those 15 and a half years, for sure, some worse than others. How did I get through them? I somehow just did. Sometimes I'd be amazed. I just go, oh, good, the day's done, and then I can, let's start fresh again, you know, the next day. Just be grateful that I got through it. I chose gratitude. I guess I chose, it's about that framing, how I frame life. And that journey I was on with Sunny and her disability, I guess I learned to, maybe the word is acceptance or surrendered to it, and learned to even embrace it and go, okay, this is the deal, this is what I've got. How am I going to embrace that and celebrate that and love Sunny for who she is, not for who she isn't, but who she is now, and really embrace that. And so to be grateful to have her for the way she is, and that was with lots of challenges, medical challenges and a different kind of journey. So I would often...
Hope for a better day?
Yes, intentionally choose gratitude and hope. And often I did a few times a year of gratitude on my Facebook page and look at my day with Sunny in particular and find out what I was grateful for within that. And very often it was about Sunny smiles and the little tiny wins. And I went looking for hope. It's like I'm on a treasure hunt. I'm looking for little moments of hope. And, you know, that might be a photo that the aide would send from school of like, I thought you might like to see this. And here's Sunny, you know, smiling her little darling face off over something that happened. And I was like, there you go. I've got it today. You know, it's worth it all. It's everything. And celebrating the little wins. The cochlear implant changed our life because it was just so sad to think she couldn't hear our voices. And when she would start responding to music, because she was a creative soul, like her mum and dad. And so when she showed joy at, you know, Sesame Street songs, and when I would sing familiar songs to her and she would light up, I would just, oh my gosh, like that just gave us so much hope for her quality of life and her joy. And I guess I just looked for more joy in life because I realized that's going to help me survive. If I look at everything that's not okay, I'm not going to make it. And I also had Sunny's twin to mother, and I had to kind of, it's like I'm showing you how to live life when things are tough. You know, do I want to show her that I'm this wreck, you know, and that I get bitter? I didn't want to be a bitter woman. So I'm like, I need to show my daughter how to live when things are tough, because life is tough and sometimes it looks like this. And so I would, yeah, I'd go looking for the joy, looking for the hope, looking with gratitude. And right up till the end, the gift of her beautiful life with her beautiful chubby cheeks and golden hair and her smile, you know, like looking at what she did bring rather than what she didn't bring. But I felt like I had to be deliberate and intentional about that. That became one of my survival thing. And Sunny, we did a book together. I called it Cup of Courage because I felt like I was always looking for courage, and she loved art and painting and colours. Oh my gosh. So we did paintings, and my other daughter did some sketches of cups, and I wrote all these little inspirational things I was learning from Sunny, and we put them together in a little book, Cup of Courage. And I feel that still lives on, you know, and it's it was being deliberate. I had to choose to do that. It didn't naturally come, but the payoff was beautiful. Beautiful, yeah.
Alex, hopeful, hopefulness. What are your moments of hope and hopefulness?
I guess that since you start these journeys, you always hope. I think that even from the moment that you don't understand anything, you just hope that you can understand. You just hope that someone can give you answers. You just hope that you can have a better day every day. Yeah. And even when you know what you're dealing with, that what you're going through, you always hope for a good day. And again, yeah, grateful. You learn to say thank you to everything you get. You're really grateful. And after Sophia passed, we hoped that she could stay with us, you know, in our lives. So we keep her alive. Like when we do even Kris Kringle in Christmas, like we hope we can have our Christmas. We didn't want to shut down and say no more Christmas in this house. You know, everything is going to be sad because I can see her smiling and saying, no, let's do it, you know. So we hope that I hoped that my whole family could do it because I want it. So they did it.
So and your whole family has been able to embrace yes. that sense of hope that you had while she was sick and after her passing.
Yes, yes. We did the best we could. Like we will watch movies with her all together, immediate family, 10 people. In one sofa, all together, all squeezed, you know, beautiful moments that you remember. Like, we hope we could share that. Yeah. And after, like I was saying with the Kris Kringle, we put her in the Kris Kringle bag. And, you know, I said, whoever gets Sophia gives me a candle. And I will get a paper for Sophia and I will give you a present. So we include her and we have Christmas decorations with her clothes, with her Christmas clothes, and we do rainbow cake on her birthday. Like we, you know, like I hope that people keep her alive. That's my biggest hope. Yeah. Mm.
If you had a moment to meet a family who was on this journey, what would be one of the first things you would share with them?
Oh, I'd probably give them the biggest hug, you know, and look in their eyes and say they're wonderful and they're doing a great job. I don't know, I think just enjoy loving their child while they have them for who they are and just looking at what you have rather than what you don't have, which is what I still do. Like I still remember Sunny a lot today, and a symbol that I've had for Sunny because of her smile and the radiant joy that she brought, and part of her name as well, is a sunflower because it's brave and bright. It looks to the sun. It was also one of my favourite flowers. And so when we did Sunny's memorial service, we filled the place with hundreds of sunflowers. It was beautiful because nothing about her is black and mourning. And so I got a tattoo on my arm, so I feel like I could carry a sunflower around. I bought everything sunflower. I've got sunflower tops and dresses and jewellery. And that's my way of just carrying her and loving her, even still now. So to find ways of finding symbolism to just incorporate the beauty and the memory of loving your child into the life that you go on to.
Alex, what would you share?
What I would share is they always here. They never left. That's what I always say. They are with you and they're always going to be with you. You just have to feel them. You just have to get used to, and it's going to take time. Can take 1 year, can take 1 month. It's up to us. But the more you feel them, the better you're going to feel. That's what I always try to say. They only change the shape. They're here in a different form.
Tell us about your other daughter and how, you know, she remembers Sophia and what some of the things that happen in your home.
Sophia was a creative person as well, and she loved art. And she actually said, I want to be an artist, to my cousin. And they used to paint together, and she used to paint with her sister as well. They used to be really close. They were like almost 3 years apart, but they were like twins as well. So that was beautiful to watch them. And they appreciate nature together. Sophia used to pick rocks, love nature. So they used to go together to parks. We didn't do too many fancy stuff. That was mainly parks, go out to nature and painting and a lot of art in their lives. And now Sophia's sister, she's doing some creative designs with wood at the school. She's in year 8 now. So she came last night with this beautiful, like a little box in wood. So beautiful. And I say, what is this? And she said, that's a dragonfly. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's so beautiful. She, you know, she doesn't talk too much, but she always does little things like that, you know. I just give her 2 kisses always and say, at night and when she goes to school, this is 1 kiss from me, 1 kiss from your sister. And she knows, and she's always expecting that second kiss, she knows. So yeah, that's one way. And Sophia, like I said, I just wanted to mention that my niece, like I have 2 nieces, and they were like siblings, the 4 of them. So my nieces as well, you know, they've been through a difficult time as well. So one of them did a project for Sophia with her friends from Europe, and they created this space for Sophia, for Sophia's art, and it's been presented in Norway. It's now in August, it was presented in Finland, and it was in a children's museum, telling children how to pursue their dreams. No matter what age they are, if they want to do something, just follow it. So yeah, it is hope again, for not just for her sister, but for my nieces as well, that they deserve, you know, to be mentioned as well, because they were like 4 siblings together. And yeah, they followed that art. And there is a song as well, and there is a lot done, you know, to remember Sophia and to pass that message of hope and faith and life. And yeah, so much there.
Thank you so much, Helena and Alex, for joining us today. There is hope, and you've given us some wonderful information and some great stories about your beautiful girls. And I'm sure the families listening to this will find that as well. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the second season of the Royal Children's Hospital podcast series, Life, Love and Loss, Caring for a Child Who is Dying. The Royal Children's Hospital, together with the Victorian Paediatric Palliative Care Program and Palliative Care Australia, would like to thank the parents who've generously taken part in this series. You can search all the episodes online at rch.org.au/podcasts. I'm Lena Kneva. Thanks for listening.